Welcome to Curing with Sound, a podcast presented by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston-Smith. A pioneer in the field of focus ultrasound, Dr. Daniel Jean-Menaud has dedicated his career to unraveling the complexities of neurological movement disorders and neuropathic pain. In this conversation, we reflect on his legacy upon his retirement. In 2008, alongside his colleague Professor Ernst Martin, he conducted the world's first series of focus ultrasound interventions for neuropathic pain, a groundbreaking achievement that laid the foundation for transformative developments in the field. He founded the Sana Model Center of Ultrasound Functional Neurosurgery in Zurich, Switzerland in 2010, which recently closed its doors after nearly 15 years. He and his team completed 511 focus ultrasound interventions and sonicated 665 targets. Additionally, he led several world-first clinical trials and has over 60 publications, further solidifying his status as a trailblazer. He graduated from the University of Lausanne, completing a doctoral thesis on neuroplasticity. He then trained in neurosurgery and later became the head of the Department of Functional Neurosurgery at the University Hospital of Zurich between 1989 and 2009. His interest is in the treatment of chronic and therapy-resistant functional brain disorders, including movement disorders, neuropathic pain and tinnitus, epilepsy, and neuropsychiatric disorders. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Jean-Menaud.
Hello, Allison. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, and thank you for being here. So before you learned of focus ultrasound, your three main areas of interest were in neuropathic pain, Parkinson's-related tremor, and essential tremor. So what kind of research were you doing at the time?
I am, since 1989, a so-called functional neurosurgeon. So we deal with brain diseases that produce symptoms in the sense of overactivity of the brain. And as you just mentioned, one of the main indications or situations we can treat and have to treat are the field of neurogenic or neuropathic pain and movement disorders, including Parkinson's and essential tremor. And I've been working on this domain since 1989, technically using, at the time, the radiofrequency stereotaxy, so using radiofrequency lesioning in the brain to help gain these symptoms. So, and then came ultrasound.
And when did you first learn of focus ultrasound? Were you looking into other studies utilizing it?
It must have been, I think, in 2004. At that time, I still remember a phone call by my colleague, Professor Ernst Martin, who was a radiologist, had identified the potentialities of focus ultrasound. And he knew that I was working in my field, making tiny, millimeter-large therapeutic lesion inside the brain, the middle of the brain. So he thought it would be an ideal situation to try and explore. So he was essentially quite right indeed. And we then came together and developed a whole research program, coming at the end to the first trial performed in our case, in neuropathic pain, using focused ultrasound. I insist here that the first persons and teams who were dressing the brain were, in fact, our colleagues in Boston, in Brigham Women's Hospital, who were the first to think about brain possibilities and working on brain tumors. So they were really the pioneers. We had a field that was very handy for this indication, small therapeutic work in the middle of the brain, which really was a very favorable start.
And before you even started utilizing focus ultrasound, in 1998, you received the Pfizer Research Prize. Could you tell us more about the research you were doing at that time and your findings?
Yes, but exactly. They relate to what the mechanisms are that are at the source of these symptoms and diseases that I mentioned before, mainly abnormal movements and neuropathic pain. And we found, indeed, drug intervention in all these symptoms, movement disorders, pain, also tinnitus, epilepsy, etc., the same special activity. We proposed a term of thalamocortical dysrhythmia, which means improper or inadequate rhythmicity, which affects too much overactivity inside the brain. If an area of the brain, which is a motor area, is affected by the symptom, we get abnormal movements. If it's a pain domain, we have neuropathic pain, etc.
And how did that work inform what you did later on incorporating focus ultrasound? Did you rely on those findings a lot?
In fact, the two main fields in my activities have been on this, understanding what the problem is and then doing something therapeutically. And focus ultrasound came into the second part. We had, before focus ultrasound, to penetrate with electrodes. High risks to the brain, maybe a bleeding risk, infectious risk, and displacement of the brain could also reduce precision of all the technique that we might use. So focus ultrasound was offering the possibility to, in fact, go on doing the same on the basis of what we have found out, but doing it more precisely and much less needlessly. And what until now the results have shown is indeed the case. All the more than 500 interventions performing more than 600 targets, we haven't had a single bleeding, of course, no infection, and the precision is demonstrated to be inside half millimeter. So we have a chance here, technically, technologically, thanks to focus ultrasound, to optimize what we can do in terms of precision and safety.
And then moving to later on in your career, you also achieved the world first breakthrough in MR-guided non-invasive neurosurgery, where 10 patients at the University Children's Hospital of Zurich were successfully treated through transcranial focus ultrasound. And this expanded the horizons for neurosurgery and the treatment of different neurological conditions. So can you tell us more about this study and its impacts?
Yeah. It developed then between 2005 and 2009, and the goal was to, for this special indication of functional surgery, to test everything in the sense of feasibility to move to a human brain. We had to develop research on cadaver heads, etc., and then finally we could have all factors to move into the application. And we chose my first indication from the beginning, which was neuropathic pain, and had 11 patients who treat with focus ultrasound. The goal of the study was to check for feasibility, reproducibility of the technique, and also getting first insight into safety and efficacy. And the study was really a great success indeed. And we've published the results also after a year in 2012. Over these 11 patients.
That's incredible. And in 2010, you founded the SANA Model Center of Ultrasound Functional Neurosurgery in Zurich. What were some of the first cases you treated at your practice?
Exactly these three domains. So neuropathic pain, Parkinson as a whole, not only tremor, and essential tremor. So we started since 2011, as you said, and with these three indications. And we had the chance to be able to put a trial, an official company-sponsored trial, 2011 to 12, supported by Insightech. Since 13, then we have moved on with our center independently.
And then you recently published a follow-up analysis to that trial with 55 patients who were experiencing chronic and therapy-resistant neuropathic pain. Can you talk about the results of that follow-up analysis?
Yes. Was indeed, as you mentioned, 55 patients, consecutive patients, and we have a mean follow-up of 55 months. So it's a solid study in the sense that it's a large number of patients and a long follow-up, a mean follow-up. The global results can be summarized in the following way. More than 50 patients got a stable over the all the follow-ups results amounting to more than 50% pain relief. So all 50% pain relief in 50% of patients. There's another way. This is just pain relief, as mentioned by the patient, untouched. And we can also measure the so-called visual analysis scale, which allows us to present differently the pain relief on the visual display. And the reduction of pain in this display was between 40 and 50%. The reduction of brain attacks, an important part of neuropathic pain, so for example, in trigeminal pain, it was higher, more than 90%, 93%.
Wow, that's fantastic. And what were some of the reactions from the participants of the trial? Have you heard from them on the positive results that they've been experiencing?
Yeah, and we have followed them up to a year, which was a good thing to do, of course. And pain relief is always very appreciated. All the patients get to surgery, have got a chronic therapy-resistant, long-lasting severe pain condition. So any relief is very much appreciated, indeed.
And are there any other conditions you're particularly interested in or that you see as an important emerging topic in the field?
Yeah, well, we have contributed until today mainly the two mentioned fields of Parkinson and essential tremor and published in Sonny Mondol, our center. We have published, I think, around 10 peer-reviewed papers on these three fields. And the other domain that you mentioned also in my biography that we have explored less in number before, we never had the time to really move into them until today. I'm really gladly to the attention and the development of other colleagues and teams. They are the fields of epilepsy and or neuropsychiatry and tinnitus could be also considered to expand the indication in this approach of functional neurosurgery.
And did you have any mentors who helped you succeed in the field or sparked your interest in a different mechanism or clinical indication?
Yes, indeed. The first one in time was Professor Hendrik van der Loos, a Dutch neuroanatomist who in Lausanne in Switzerland was my mentor for my thesis. I had the luck to be introduced by him in all the arcanas of science and could do my thesis on neuroplasticity with him. Then came Professor Rodolfo Linas, an immense neurophysiologist and become a dear friend of mine. And it was great to develop this dysrhythmia concept together. I owe a lot to him in all the very fruitful discussion we'd have all along to have until today. And then came Professor Yasangil, a great neurosurgeon. My department in Zurich was inserted in his neurosurgical clinic, and he has never stopped supporting us and stimulating us all along the time on this field of functional neurosurgery. And his successor, Professor Yonekawa, did all the same also till he left. So these are the main mentors I can think of.
You recently closed the Sonny Mondol Center of Ultrasound Functional Neurosurgery after 14 years. What is it like reflecting on this incredible legacy?
Yeah, it's globally, it's a miraculous, amazing 14 years to consider. Having been able to develop a small center, personnel or staff less than 10, administered by a family-based tiny LTD company, private, and being able, as we endeavored, to keep the standards of academic medicine, we've mentioned 10 papers peer-reviewed in the field, taking benefit of the connection thanks to digital world, integrating also the very important domain of emotions and feelings in these indications, and maintaining the numbers that we discussed before of activity has been a simply amazing adventure. And I'm so delighted to have been, I had the chance and very grateful to have the chance to do that together with a very dear and dedicated team.
And speaking of legacy, when you look back at all of the work you've done, are there any achievements that you're particularly proud of, or are there any patient stories that stand out to you?
The achievements, I would say, on the scientific level, would be this thalamocortic dysrhythmia development. And on the clinical dimension, would be this Sonny Mondol 40 years. I have one or two patient stories in femoropathic pain that might be of interest to you. One was a patient having had a discal hernia operation in the lumbar sacral area. The hernia could be taken away, but the compression on the nerve, on the root, produced then a typical classical neuropathic pain situation, and which could not be controlled by other interventions or any drug intake. So the perfect indication to do neurosurgery in a sense, and we do it. So we were performing this target that we had described until now, against neuropathic pain, and the patient suddenly had a cry and stopped everything. It's under local anesthesia, so the patient was having a surprise, so we stopped everything. I came to him, and he told me, it's incredible, I feel my leg again. That was an incredible moment. If you have time, I have another situation.
Oh, sure, yes.
which has been very fruitful. For us to realize it was a young lady having had a brain infarct inside her thalamus. And it was a malformation. It was a young person, and she recovered very well from motor losses, but kept then the neuropathic pain syndrome in the whole hemibody contralateral to thalamus, as it's always the case. And she had as part of her syndrome, this allodynia, an extreme sensitivity to the touch, on light touch on the skin. It was on the arm and didn't allow her to carry a blouse or anything, because any touch on the arm was very painful, like electrical discharges and pins and needles. So we began the work in Target, again on the anesthesia. And the patient began caressing very thoughtfully her arm without a single sign of pain.
Wow, that's incredible.
We were all massively delighted, of course, yeah. And I let her do for moments for her to integrate the new situation, and then came to her and asked her, do you feel any change now? And she thought 2 seconds and said, and that was exactly the same. So we finished the work, and then on the next day, I sat with her because I had to understand what was happening here. And this is the basis for you to understand that in a series of neuropathic pain and treatments, you cannot expect a close to 100% relief, because there's the factor which is here present, which is psycho-emotional. In pain, frustration can be an issue, as I've showed you in this case and in this study. This needs to be integrated, of course, every time when pain surgery is considered. It doesn't take away the efficiency, but we need to integrate this additional factor very solidly.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. I would never consider that aspect that you have to take into account. But it's great that, you know, some people are able to have that relief or get as close as possible to relief.
Yeah, and then if there are psycho-emotional elements, they can be then addressed by psychotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And can then improve further after surgery if they can then reduce their frustration levels or their anxiety. Mainly in pain is frustration.
Have you heard from any of those participants who went on to work with a psychologist and... has their pain reduced later on?
Yes, absolutely. I have also another particular case in mind of a lady who had also a discal hernia, post-discal hernia, and neuropathic pain situation. And the EEG showed before surgery an overactivity where we expected in the pain-related sectors. And after surgery, she had only a diffuse overactivity in her whole emotion brain, much less strong, but still present. And she had an insufficient relief at the time. And then I had advised her, because she was a very religious person, an American, very religious person, and advised her to find an environment where she would have psychotherapy compatible. and her own religious feelings. And she found that in Great Britain, from nowhere. And it came a year later, her EEG was normalized.
Wow.
And when I asked how she managed to do that, she said, of course, she'd been well supported, but central idea was for her, I think I quote her correctly, that if God was so perfect, he could have only perfect children, and she would not be as bad as she thought she was.
Mm.
She was a nice insight into a very strong emotion factor,
mm-hmm.
self-image and frustration.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's so interesting. Well, you've contributed so much research and so much to the field. When did you first hear about the foundation?
Must have been in the beginning of the Zurich trial, I would suppose around 2005 or 2006, and came into contact, and I had, until today, always amazing contact with the foundation. We had the support of a project as I was in Zurich for our trials, financial support. And since Sony Volume existed since 2011, of course, the very detailed and updated website describing for patients worldwide where the centers are that do the jobs was fundamentally important for us, in the sense of having many patients that went to your website and then found a way to us. And I cannot mention all of them, but I have many amazing contacts with many collaborators. One of them come to my mind, this Tim Meacham, has been really supportive all of our time. So this has been now a very positive contact and experience with the foundation.
What gave you the courage to try these new treatments that others had not yet tried in humans?
I was encouraged by, as I mentioned before, by the coverage data my colleagues in Boston Brigham Women's Hospital had to move, had the idea to go and do treatments in the brain. They had a much more difficult context with the brain tumors that are more difficult to reach, that can be, etc. But it really gave me the insight that there was a whole team here really solidly considering this possibility. It was important for me. And then by just considering the way the system had been developed, it made a lot of sense to me. And having this small target in the center of the brain was really offering an amazing possibility to optimize, as I mentioned before, safety and efficacy of what we do. So it seemed to me to make completely sense.
What advice do you have for young neurosurgeons who are using focus ultrasound in the brain?
I think the idea that it's important in this field to keep the different dimensions of physiology, anatomy, technology, the machine itself you want to use, and always go to treat by elements of understanding what the mechanism is. I think in these days, sometimes empiricism is a bit too strong, and there's not enough, in my opinion, always enough interest into what the mechanism is on the basis of which one can decide what to do. And then, in a sense, use the machine as appropriately as possible. So it's just a flow of work. What's the mechanism? What I know about it, and what can I do, and what offers me the machine to do as appropriately as possible. And always in medicine, but in this field particularly, integrate the psychosocial dimension, psychoemotional, psychosocial dimension. We, in this small group, this small team of Sony Module, it was amazing, part of this legacy you asked me before, to be able to offer high-tech dimension and scientific dimension, but also almost a family-like feeling. A patient could feel supported, understood, and supported in all the emotional dimensions that are so important, as we discussed.
What's next for you after retirement?
Probably a book or two.
Oh, that's great. Any particular topics?
One topic is what we just discussed. I think emotions are fundamentally important. We've discussed, for example, with this frustration scale and leaders. So I think it's always useful to insist maybe again about the deep integration of and ideas and emotions when we do medicine. And this is something I had to discover in my years of career and get better into integration of these dimensions. Could explain things that I could not understand before. So one element, and the other element is also, I gave also a little insight before, is also then the spiritual damage. We as human beings are always wondering what happens to us, what is all that, did I deserve it or not, etc. Depends on what sort of spiritual or materialistic insight one has. And this needs to be considered, I think, and integrated deeply. And try to do something in this set.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jean Menaud. We really appreciate you being here and sharing your expertise with us.
It was indeed a great pleasure. And thank you very much for that. And all the best.
This episode of Curing with Sound has been presented by the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. If you would like to learn more about Focused Ultrasound or the Foundation, visit our website at fusfoundation.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media.